From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am Hunter Deucing. With me is the renegade YouTube uploader, Stuart Balk. Say hello, Stuart.
Yeah, apparently this man knew his limitations.
Yes, Stuart has been successfully defeated by YouTube, but we'll get that in a second. And also joining us is John Denver himself, Mr. John Grace. Say hello, John.
Yep. Hello.
And I am very excited because today we're going to be talking about a documentary on Black Oak, Arkansas, Mangrum Force, about Jim Dandy Mangrum. Very excited to talk about Jim Dandy and how he came to the rescue, his times with Elvis, how he influenced David Lee Roth. Very excited.
And that time he dealt with vigilante cops.
Yeah, that too. I'm very stoked to talk about Jim Dandy Mangrum
and
the documentary.
That's a very attractive Asian woman in his apartment block as well.
Yeah. So, you know, I did not know that Jim Dandy looked like Clint Eastwood. I did not know he carried a gun, and I thought he was from Arkansas because he's in Black Oak, Arkansas, but apparently he's from San Francisco. So I was very confused.
Didn't you hear the choir of people at the front when Harry walked out of his apartment box? They're all going, "Go, Harry Callahan! Go, Harry Callahan!"
Yeah, I was wondering why they were calling him Harry. I was like, that's Jim Dandy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, the movie's Mangrum Force. Never mind. Never mind. I was hoodwinked.
Pull your Emily Latella glasses off.
Oh, goodness gracious me. I should learn to read. So, Mangrum Force, directed by Ted Post.
Yeah, well, really directed by Clint Eastwood and Buddy Van Horn.
Of course.
Oh, was it?
Course.
Yeah, it's I kind of noticed it didn't really look like Ted Post's work because he doesn't direct in widescreen very often, and this might be one of his only scope films, and it didn't have that kind of TV blandness his work usually has. And like if you've seen Hang 'Em High or Good Guys Wear Black or Go Tell the Spartans, it's like it doesn't look like the same director. And it turns out Eastwood and Buddy Van Horn were pretty much directing half the film.
Just imagine Clint Eastwood on the set. Get out of here. I'll shoot this.
Pretty much.
That's
what he did.
This is how Michael Cimino directed Thunderbolt and Lightfoot. Let's go again. No. Clint, we should go again. We got it. It's fine.
The hell? Film costs money.
This is you're burning gold here, Mikey.
I've got that. I've got to watch that Blu-ray. I picked it up a few months back, but
And written by John Milius and Michael Cimino of Heaven's Gate notoriety, and but before we get into that, Stuart, why isn't the Midnight Movie Cowboys on YouTube anymore?
Okay, so we, you know, as a collective, uploaded a few of the episodes to YouTube and been advertising that we're now on YouTube. Well, as of today, we are no longer on YouTube. There was an issue with a particular video uploaded up there where somebody did not like it. And no, it was not the Heavy Metal Gangs of What I won. We got away with that one, amazingly. It was something else. It was the Heathens short film that was uploaded there. God, nearly 2 years ago. Now, a particular person who was heavily involved with that film did not like the fact we uploaded it, and she had placed a complaint against us, and then it was taken down. Okay, these things happen, whatever. But then all the BS that came with it, with another video on there, and then making me sit through some stupid video and answering questions like a child, was like, okay, F you all, I'm done. So spoke to the guys about it before the show. They agreed. It was like, yeah, whatever. So no more YouTube. The ones that are on there now are still on there. I won't take them down. for the five of you who did subscribe, and that was literally five of you, thank you. You're very kind. But we ain't updating on the show on there anymore. You want to get us through the usual channels, iTunes, Stitcher, the website, and you've got more than enough choices here to get us. But yeah, basically YouTube, no, we ain't uploading it anymore. They want to give us grief within a month like this. I don't want to pursue it anymore. So yeah, basically not there anymore. And yeah, that's it.
Well, so ends our short career as YouTubers.
You know what, but honestly, mate, I was thinking, who really, really sits down and listens to a podcast on YouTube?
I don't know.
I mean, you've got to do a lot of legwork.
I don't think it's a big loss for us, really.
No, I really don't. I mean, if we got ripped off a Stitcher, then yeah, that would be a bit of a kick in the guts, to be honest with you. But YouTube is no great loss. You know, you got to build an audience. And if we were going to do this thing, we should have done it 3 years ago. But whatever, 3-4 years ago.
And YouTube's apparently they just don't have like a good system for sorting out these complaints and stuff, because you know a lot of channels are getting hit by this and are complaining about it, but a lot of companies, like, they go through and they monetize stuff, like Nintendo. If you use a clip from a Nintendo game, Nintendo just takes the profits from it. It's kind of funny. But
what's got me is, how do they actually find the fact that and another video on there was one of the podcast episodes had a bit of music on there that a particular record company found out about. I really don't know how found out about it, and were like, yeah, you're using our song. And
I kind of wonder if they have interns just looking for stuff, you know.
Oh geez, what a shitty job that'd be, honestly.
But
anyway, yeah, 1 month's worth of grief, the extra legwork you got to do to actually change it to a YouTube compliant file and then upload it, the image, and then put in it's like I just don't have the time. I struggle to get through editing these half the bloody time and get them out on time on Sundays for you guys. Just no, please. I'm starting to get a migraine talking about it. But yeah, you got the picture. Yeah, no more. Yeah. No more MMC on YouTube.
So that's if you're one of our five subscribers, apologies, but there are plenty of other ways to listen to us.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
All right. Any other business, gentlemen?
Rock Month coming up soon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There will be an episode possibly next week. Maybe not. We're not sure yet. We'll announce it if there isn't. Assume that there will be. If there isn't, we will definitely announce it ahead of time. I will not be here next week if Hunter and John decide to roll with getting something done. I am prepping for Rock Month. It's very important to me. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And plus, I'll be starting literally on my 6 weeks holiday, and I just need to fucking rest. I'm exhausted, you know, so.
Oh, and the kids will be out of, wait, I don't know how your thing works. Do you have summer break over there?
No, we're complete opposites. We have the, our summer break, but ours comes in December.
Yeah, you have summers a different time, so you're in the...
completely arse about, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's all right. Well,
now I know when to travel to Australia.
Yeah.
You'll be never.
December,
yeah. If you want to pay the exorbitant...
Apparently that's the main thing, is to come around to our winter time.
Oh, yeah, but it's hot. It gets stinking hot over here sometimes.
So I should probably come. Probably our spring, which is your fall, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that'd be the best. If you come in summer, I mean, you can hit days where it's, God, last year we had one that hit 118 Fahrenheit.
Jeez.
Yeah, it can get stupidly hot sometimes over here, especially in, if you come around January and... in February. That's why Australia Man this year, in January on Australia Day, was not in a good state, because it was Australia Day and it was stinking hot as well. You need to be constantly rehydrated with beer and shit.
Jeez.
So, yeah, not a good... But anyway, we did promise this week we're actually going to not just ramble on, we're actually going to get into the film, as opposed to last week's one. Apologies for Brides of Dracula. Mm. Seemed to be popular. People liked it.
Let's talk about other stuff, guys. So, Ghostbusters trailer.
Yeah, I was just going to say, what about that Ghostbusters trailer?
Trump! Hillary.
Build the wall.
Ghostbusters.
Let's go through the list. What was
Marvel
it?
Marvel movies.
Marvel movies. Trump. Okay, Trump. Kiss. Yeah, Kiss and Gene Simmons are still stupid. Okay. What else? I'm old. There's that one. Out of the way. What else? Rob Zombie. Still a moron. Okay, yeah. I think we've basically covered all the bases so far.
Right.
D. Snyder. Man. Yeah, okay. We've mentioned him.
That's a lot of tangents we just went on.
Eddie Trunk impression.
Oh, yeah.
And Seth Rogen impression.
Seth Rogen impression, out of the way.
Yep. John has to give us his Eddie Trunk deep cuts. The deep cuts. It's the deep cuts.
Hey,
I'll play it off deep
what's
cuts.
What's your favorite? What's your favorite?
Deep cuts.
What's your favorite format, Eddie?
Oh, that would be CDs. I could play it in my car.
Can't play a vinyl in your car, right?
Not at all. I don't get it. I don't get the vinyl thing. Yeah. My brother sucks.
So, Just Press Play by Aerosmith. What did the fans think of it?
You know, the fans don't really appreciate that album. It's got some really good cuts on there. They should go back and listen to it.
I mean, it's no Rocks or, Toys in the Attic, but it's some good cuts on there.
It's her best album since Permanent Vacation.
Isn't it great that we can get Eddie Trunk on our show just at the drop of a hat?
It really
is. It's phenomenal, I tell you. I swear. We should just call it That Metal Movie Cowboys podcast.
That Metal Movie Cowboys. That Metal Cowboys.
It sounds like it should have...
It
should have Ron Keel if it's on... if it was that title. Don't worry.
So, Magnum Force... the first Dirty Harry sequel.
Yeah.
1973. Mm-hmm. Starring Clint Eastwood, Hal Holbrook, and I think Tim Matheson's in there somewhere.
And David Soul as well.
Oh, yeah, that guy too. He's got
Suzanne Summers is the topless girl in the pool.
Oh, yeah.
No way. Was it really?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, yes, wow. I was just thinking, wow, she's not too bad looking either.
I don't think she was credited. But yeah, she was that was the girl in the pool.
Oh, I would have played with my thigh master had I known that while I was watching it.
So the first Dirty Harry movie caught some flack from critics like Pauline Kael calling it fascist because Harry's sort of a cop who he's a cop who plays by his own rules, you know, like he's a guy who's kind of willing. There's a bit where he kind of tortures the Scorpio character to get information out of him. And, you know, and you see these pencil necked liberals going, nah, you've gone against the law, Callahan. And he's like, well, the law is crazy. And so that pissed a lot of people off. But, but a lot of people also liked the movie, thought it was, really cool.
Talking about
like,
the original Dirty Harry, yeah.
The original Dirty Harry.
Yeah, it's all right. It's pretty much of a buried, sort of film. No one really knows about it that much, yeah.
Yeah, nobody knows about it.
Nah.
not a thing. It's obscure.
Yeah, it's obscure. Yeah, but
sarcasm.
More obscure than 7-Ups.
I remember... Yeah. I had this girl over and she was like, what's the big deal with Clint Eastwood? Why do you know, I don't know his movies that well. And I said, well, let's watch Dirty Harry. And I threw it on and she was like, oh my God, he's sexy. She was like, I was like, yep, that's Clint Eastwood right there.
Should have said to her, at the front of my house, there is a manhole.
But it still has power all these years later.
Oh, it's amazing. It's an amazing film.
It is. Yeah. And so the sequel, Magnum Force, is about where Callahan takes on a team of renegade, leather-bound fascist bike cops who just sort of mow down mobsters with impunity. And so it almost... When I first saw this movie, I thought it was kind of apologizing for the first one. Did anybody else get that vibe from it?
No.
I didn't. And that when I first saw it, I actually didn't like it because I thought it was kind of pussing out a bit. But I saw it again.
I see what you mean. Like, I just see what you mean now by saying it. The first time I watched it, I was like, oh, this is kick-ass. I love this. But,
I was like, this is a cool movie, but I was kind of like, I feel like it's an apology. And so it kind of soured me on it a bit. Now, I watched it a few years ago again and enjoyed it quite a bit.
Do you think that was a directive given to Milius when he wrote the script that it has to have that
Well, John read more, through it. John know more about that than I would. It would be pure speculation for me to say anything.
Right.
What happened was Milius based his script off the idea of Terrence Malick's unused script for the first Dirty Harry.
Yeah, because Malick
would have had the Scorpio killer was going to be a vigilante, killing rich criminals who got away with it and were cleared by the courts.
Okay.
And so Milius liked that idea and ran with that, except making it the motorcycle cops. The funny thing is, when you listen to his commentary, he's in total sympathy with the cops. He's like, well, they haven't really done anything.
Oh, he really is.
Yet.
Yeah.
Well, and
like an the movie. Well,
and that's what, like, when I first saw it, I was like, I kind of felt like, why is John Milius making a movie that seems against his principles? But the cops are also really fucking cool. Like, they wear they got these black motorcycle suits, these sunglasses and helmet. I mean, they're mowing down people with machine guns. You're like,
Can I ask a question? Did this film come before Electric Light in Blue or after?
Around the same time. I think they were both 73.
Right.
You probably have to look it up, but around the same time.
Thanks.
Same year, 1973.
Oh, okay. Yeah. They look very, very similar. I guess that's a standard look of the SFPD for the motorcycle cops, but just very, very similar, that's all.
Oh, yeah. One of the cops was the voice of Johnny Quest on the old Hanna-Barbera series.
Get out of here. Are you serious?
Tim Matheson. Tim Matheson was the voice of Johnny Quest.
Jeez.
When he was a teenager.
And he was, he was in your favorite director's film, Animal House, by John Landis.
Yeah. I was about to say, people will know him as Otter from Animal House.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Right. Since I've never sat through Animal House, I don't even identify Matheson with that movie, even though it's his most famous role.
I kind of think of Animal House as more of a Harold Ramis thing than a John Landis thing, really.
I tried watching it. I just could not get into the humor. I'm not a big fan of Caddyshack either.
Well, I'm not a big fan of Caddyshack, but I saw Animal House as a kid and thought it was absolutely hysterical. And so, you know, I do have like a that is a movie that I have.
I can still watch it and piss myself. I think it's
God! But holy shit! One faux pas I made was they were showing it in, an old 35mm print of it at the Texas Theater in Dallas, and I went. And there was this girl I had gone on a few dates with, and I was like, oh, we should go see Animal House, you know? And I forgot how fucking, like, sexist and horrible that movie, like,
mate.
Like, the rape jokes and stuff, like, and so I was like, I took her to see it, and I was like, oh, my God. I was like, I've made a mistake, and there was not a next date.
All right, can you please heed these words? Stop getting women over to your property, or to your property, your house, and watching Dirty Harry or taking her out to watch Animal House. Please don't put any films on, because I know your taste. Just go get yourself some effing Chris Isaac CDs, like we told you.
I got the Baja Sessions.
No way. Are you serious? You got it?
Yeah, I got it.
He's learning. Johnny's learning. He's gonna get himself some cookies soon.
Here's the thing. I listen. No.
Nice job, Grasshopper.
No. A friend I had watched Dirty Harry really fucking liked it. Like, she was like, "This movie's awesome," but that was a huge mistake. Like, it wasn't a huge. Like, she didn't like freak out on me or anything, but I could tell. Like, I was like, "Oh, I forgot how these jokes have not aged well in terms of the current culture regarding like, it's got that sort of National Lampoon humor, which would be considered,
It'd be banned today. You couldn't even.
It would be considered promoting rape culture. You know,
under our so-called dominant liberal culture, you could not promote that on the news.
And those movies were made by liberals. That's the hilarious thing.
I know. A liberal back then is very different from a liberal today.
Of course.
These champagne socialists.
Yes.
That are around these days. But Magnum Force, actually, the one thing that struck me when I was watching is how freaking violent it is.
It is. It is
massively violent, even for a film from 73. I was really, like, there's some gratuitous stuff in there. And I think Milius had said that some scenes, like the Drano scene, they were not in his script. They were just suggested, like, oh, this guy was arrested for this and cleared,
That's my favorite scene in the whole movie, actually. I think it's hysterical. That is actually that cameo by Albert Popwell as the pimp is my favorite cameo by anybody in any film ever. I just think it's like me and my brother and Robbie, we just piss ourselves laughing every time we watch that, because every line he says is like, don't shit me. Like, bitch, you've been holding out on me. Damn right, I know you. Pop,
Albert doesn't play those roles in any other movies. Like, he usually plays more, you know, stoic characters or whatever.
He's the guy on
Cleopatra the receiving... Jones in the Casino of Gold, you know.
He
plays more normal characters. I think that's the only time he played a pimp, and he really ran with it.
Oh, yeah, he relished in it, because, like I said, it's like, let's check out that titty bag. Let's check out the snatch bag, too.
I think Albert watched The Mac, Superfly.
I mean, he did it better than The Mac. I thought The Mac is just a boring-ass movie, really. I don't like it much.
It's terrible.
For Superfly. I don't get this love for Superfly. It is boring as hell.
Oh, I remember watching it in college in my African Americans in film class and thinking it was dull as shit.
It is.
And the soundtrack's fucking great.
Oh, the soundtrack is the standout. Amazing. Yeah.
But I was watching this and I was going, the only reason people like this is because of the soundtrack. The movie's boring.
Try watching Superfly TNT. Oh, God.
Yeah, sure. I'm sure that's...
Nobody even watched that back when it came out.
No? Yeah, I don't think... it was totally... nobody cared.
It killed Ron O'Neill's career.
Hey, you did get another role in the... I'm going to get you, sucker. Was he in that one?
No, I think he refused to do it. I think he was insulted by it. He was one of those guys like Fred Williams. Fred Williamson claims that he read the I'm Going to Get You, Sucker script and then flew into L.A., went to see Keenan Ivory Wayans and ripped up the script at his face and threw it at him.
Oh, shit. Wow.
They're like, how dare you insult my films? You know how he is.
Oh, jeez. It's like, come on. You know, this is good for your... This is good for you. It's good for... They clearly like these movies. Just because you're parroting it doesn't mean you hate it.
Oh, yeah.
Well Fred's very individualistic. He always does things his way. So, you know. Mm. A couple of weeks ago, he's up on YouTube stumping for Trump. So he's like, he definitely goes his own direction.
Well, make America great again.
Yeah. But Albert Popwell, he was in the first Dirty Harry. He was the guy who was on the receiving end of that now famous, you know, Do You Feel Lucky Punk? That's him. Right. The black bank robber who's lying on the ground. He's in... I don't know if he's in The Enforcer. I'm dead sure he's in Sudden Impact.
He's in The Enforcer and Sudden Impact. And The Enforcer, he's the leader of like a black radical group.
Right.
That Harry goes to for information.
And Sudden Impact, and then, I believe there's a scene he's in the woods with Harry target shooting or something like that.
He's his fellow partner. He's his fellow officer who goes to help out.
There you go.
When he's in that little coastal town that's actually Monterey and Carmel by the sea.
Been a number of years since I watched Sudden Impact. Remember liking it.
Yeah.
I know. I'm not going to get into the contentious issue of you guys not liking Sandra Locke, because I really like Sandra Locke a lot. I know you guys have no love for her, so we won't go there.
Let's not go there.
Yeah, I know. But that whole
I remember I probably said this on the podcast before, but my grandmother said her view, she loved Clint Eastwood, but her view of him was tainted because he was with Sandra Locke. It's like the reverse of Shannon Tweed being with Gene Simmons, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's everybody. Seriously, I grew up with parents hating Sandra Locke, and family couldn't stand it when she was on the screen. Actually, she was just that despised because it was obviously Clint practicing nepotism and giving roles to her.
She was the Sherry Moon zombie of her day, was she?
Yes.
Yes!
He was, Clint Eastwood was like, yeah. Wolf, bitch.
He probably paid half her half a usual SAG salary.
Can we get Clint Eastwood actually re-recording Rob Zombie's songs? It would be good.
Oh, like, boy.
Everybody's fucking in a UFO. Dig through the ditches and burn through the witches. Dracula.
And Rob,
I'm the one that you wanted. I'm the super beast.
And Rob Zombie covers Gran Torino.
Run around Gran Torino. Yeah. Yeah. Plus,
you gotta slip in some anime orgasm sound effects to that and
some Russ Morris snippets as well.
Yeah.
Let's get off Rob Zombie because we'll be on that sucker for half an hour.
No, we got to stay away from our cliches. We have to have the cliche free episode.
It's like we should rename this podcast. Throats. Yeah, well, we should rename this podcast not MMC but ADD instead.
But so, is this the movie that got Michael Cimino the gig directing Thunderbolt and Lightfoot?
No, I think he did Thunderbolt. Actually, maybe he did that because Eastwood was really big on promoting new directors. And
yeah, that was the year after. That was 74.
Yeah, yes. Giving young guys a chance. So, yeah, this is the film that did it, where he was working with Eastwood, and then he I think, showed him the Thunderbolt and Lightfoot script and said he wanted to direct it, and Eastwood's like, yeah, sure. Because if Eastwood didn't think things were going good, he could always bully him and fire him or whatever.
Of course, because he could control him. And
if you read up on the Phil Kaufman incident on Outlaw Josie Wales, that was actually became a Directors Guild rule that an actor couldn't, like, fire a director and take over the directing.
Yeah, because that's something, because that's an Eastwood film, but he fired Phil Kaufman off the movie.
Right.
He didn't have
much patience for these arty types on his movies, you know?
because he knew time was money, and he came from a time where this stuff was filmed efficiently. I mean, he did, what, 300 episodes of Rawhide or whatever the hell? Yeah. I mean, it's like he knew you were wasting money. That whole Kubrick thing. Yeah, 35mm film is expensive. It's different now.
There's a reason they don't use it anymore.
everything's digital video now because it's a lot easier and you can get away with doing multiple takes, but Eastwood was just kind of like two takes and that's it. You know, if it didn't work in the first two takes, it's not going
to
work.
Well, that's why he's able to crank out like two movies a year, although he doesn't do it anymore.
Very, very productive. I mean, only Woody Allen, I think, is now more prolific than Eastwood, and just because Eastwood's old and slowing down.
Yeah, but I mean, even like 5 years ago, Eastwood seemed like he put out two movies a year, more than Woody Allen.
Yeah, he did. He was super prolific. Well, he had the deal with Warner Brothers where it'd be like, he would do a Dirty Harry movie, and then he would get to do a movie he wanted to do that wasn't going to make money, like The Beguiled or, you know, his personal projects, Play Misty for Me, and then he would do a Dirty Harry movie to make up for the fact that that didn't make any money or, if anything, lost money. And the Dirty Harry films and his other cop films were so cheap made, they just made crazy profits. Like, even Milius said that he pitched other ideas for Dirty Harry sequels after Magnum Force, but Clint wanted to do them, but he's like, but you're too expensive right now. Because
the enforcer feels
Milius
like
had become a highly... And the Milius had said that it was like, okay, because his fee got too high, Eastwood didn't want to use them anymore. He goes, I got to crank these out cheap. They don't have to be good. They just have to be cheap and make money. You know, they have to be just good enough to make the money. And the Enforcer was actually pitched by a couple of high school kids.
I believe that. It looks cheap as all heck, really.
Right, and then it got heavily rewritten by Sterling Siliphant, which is shocking. Like, Siliphant must have cut Eastwood a deal and not charged him too much. But if we do The Enforcer, we'll talk more about that because I've got a lot of inside dope on that one.
Oh, yeah, we'll end
that's up. Not even
we'll
on the
sure. I think we should celebrate the Guns N' Roses reunion by doing the Deadpool, right, guys?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to be sick that week.
But... But yeah, with this, I was really astonished by the violence. I mean, every time somebody's shot, there is a squib.
Yeah.
They do not lose any chance to do that.
Well, and that's one reason, really, like, when I went back and watched it, I was so entertained because it was so much more violent than the first movie, you know?
Oh, gosh. The Lalo Schifrin score, too, is great.
Oh, Lalo Schifrin is a selling point for sure for these movies. Yeah.
I like the thing that struck me the most that I really liked this was the... the San Francisco scenery. It was just beautiful to look at. Really,
it's terrific.
Yeah. Just beautiful to look
at. San Francisco, you know? Before it was taken over by millennial tech dickheads.
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
When it was a beautiful city. And it's fascinating. And it's got all the... It's so sleazy and so violent and yet funny. I mean, they don't really miss a chance to be gratuitous with they're really pushing. I don't even know if the R rating or if these were ever threatened with like an X rating for violence.
And it even felt like kind of California porny with some of the like outdoor parties, like Susan Summers and stuff.
Totally,
like, it felt like
boogie. Oh, and also the scene in that guy's penthouse.
Oh,
That's a scene you couldn't do today. You couldn't even suggest it.
Didn't they do that same scene again in The Enforcer? Or something like it?
I'd have to watch it again. I haven't seen it.
I'm sure from memory they did.
If
five.
Possibly. I just don't remember the Enforcer being as graphic as this, but I have not watched it in years.
Man, the Enforcer, every time there's a football game that finishes early, and they go, or a cricket game that finishes early because of the 5 days, and it usually finishes like in 3.5 days, it's like, quick, chuck the Enforcer on TV. It's always on. That or Lethal Weapon 1 are always the fill-in movies. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, when I was a kid, Magnum Force was the first Dirty Harry film I saw when I was like 6 years old.
One I saw. I saw it on TV. I didn't know it was Magnum Force. I thought it was Dirty Harry when I was a kid because they were just Dirty Harry movies. And so I remember seeing a guy like getting thrown out the window and stuff and going, man, these movies rule. But I saw it when I was a kid, didn't realize, and it was Magnum Force, though. I thought I was watching Dirty Harry, and then later I found
out. You thought the character's name was Dirty Harry, but the actual film was called Magnum Force. Yeah, yeah.
Right, yeah. I mean, and I just thought, it's Dirty Harry, you know.
Yeah, but I've always liked this sequel. You know, I still thought it was okay when I watched it today again. It was, actually a lot better than okay. But did you guys hear the Milius commentary at all?
I didn't, no.
I listened.
When we decided to do it, I just haven't had time to sit down and listen to it, and I was kind of bummed that I didn't get to.
Yeah. The scene with the pimp, I'll come back to that, was quite amusing. He goes, he's pretty quiet throughout a lot of the film. He's,
you know what,
dry.
The commentary needed Arnold Schwarzenegger there with him.
Yeah, yes, it did.
Yeah,
this is the part where I put the dreidel down the whore's mouth.
This is the part where he shoots the topless woman in the ice grater.
Yeah, look at that. It's a dummy falling out of the building. look, he's getting on the motorcycle.
That's a nice idea. San Francisco before I ruined it, am I right? Yeah.
I said, you know, I love the Dirty Harry films and I wanted to be governor of California.
I remember watching the Dirty Harry DVD special features, and Arnold Schwarzenegger was like, he's walking up with a hamburger and he shoots him. It's crazy. And I was like, Arnold, it's a fucking hot dog.
Everything's hamburger to him.
Yeah. Sorry, it's American. It's a hamburger.
Extra rare hamburgers.
Getting
back to Milius bit with the commentary, he goes, he's pretty dry and pretty quiet throughout the whole thing, and he goes, I don't know why this guy would be carrying a can of Drano. I don't even know why I wrote it. he goes, I don't remember why I wrote this. And he goes, what a shame. She was kind of cute as well, that girl. And also one of my favorite actors in this, Hal Holbrook. I really like him quite a bit.
Oh, yeah, he's a good actor in general.
He's very good. Very, yeah, very good.
I don't think you can ever throw shade at old Hal Holbrook. Even if he's in a movie I hate, I'm like, yeah, but he was good.
I always got him mixed up for years with Hal Linden, you know, the animals. Hal Linden.
Just by the name, Barney Miller.
I always knew him from Animals before Barney Miller.
Oh, no, he's Barney Miller to me. Yeah, and also, he dubbed a voice. He dubbed a voice in one of the old Godzilla movies, Destroy All Monsters.
Well, he's also the...
He used to do dubbing.
He's also the main actor.
He used to do dubbing for AIP.
Did he? Yeah, he was also one of the main actors in When You Come Back, Red Rider, along with Marjo Gortner.
Oh, is he? Oh, yeah, I've never seen this film.
Yeah,
that's
one Stu always talks about, and I want to see it because he's always said, "Oh, when you coming back, Red Rider?"
You don't know. You don't know. Every day I'll go on Blu-ray.com looking for the news, waiting for that film to come out.
I know. You're obsessed with it.
Make a note to have that dialogue drop on the sound.
Like every month when Criterion announces their releases, Stu goes, "No, when you coming back, Red Rider?"
No, they won't. They're too pompous. They just
I know, it's just
faggy and pompous. I hate Criterion.
Well, at least we get Chimes at Midnight. You know.
You know what? Right? I go when Criterion announce their titles, and I go, "What are these films?" And I say, "I bet you I'll go down to the comments section." Someone's like, "Oh my god, day one purchase for me for sure." Yep, and they're there every month.
Well, it's one of the things like Criterion. They've been doing a lot of double dipping lately and stuff. And I'm just kind of like, you know, they're not releasing stuff I'm getting jazzed about. Like, okay, I'm gonna pick up. Like, I'm looking at the coming soon. Fantastic Planet, gonna get that. Chimes at Midnight, gonna get that. You know, releasing A Touch of Zen in Region 1 is important, but I have the Masters of Cinema one.
they've got a deal with Masters of Cinema because I went to see Fantastic Planet earlier this week at the Alamo.
Mm-hmm.
And when the film ended, it was supposed to be a Criterion presentation, a Masters of Cinema credit came up.
Well,
at the end, so they're sharing transfers or something.
They're getting them from the same source, because I know Criterion is launching a line in England, so they're kind of going to competition with Masters of Cinema.
But they're not going to probably release the same titles,
right? They're probably going to competition. Yeah.
There's a no-compete clause, I'm sure, with what they're... I think they're using the same 4K masters, I think.
I know that Tom Jennings and Joachim over at Masters of CinemaCast, they actually, like, keep in touch with the people at Masters of Cinema. And they actually talk about... They have pretty intimate knowledge of that on their show. But they said that Masters of Cinema's had a hard time getting titles. Like, they've been losing bids to Criterion.
I actually heard you on there the other week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've been on their show, yeah.
Well, you did the St. Matthew, whatever the hell.
Yeah, okay. I did Gospel According to St. Matthew. It, yeah. I feel like I also was on their Silent Running show, which, yeah, they did a show recently where they talked about what their favorite shows were, and they said that was their – one of them said that was his favorite. And I was like, okay, cool. But
notice I didn't ever get an invite over there. It's like
they're probably worried you're going to say something racist. I'm just kidding. No.
I'll have to listen to it and tolerate their accents.
Yeah, but no. So they always do like a news bit, and they have pretty intimate knowledge because they have people from the label on their show. So.
Oh, really?
But yeah, some other upcoming Criterion stuff. I might get the Carnival of Souls Blu-ray just because I really like that movie.
Is that the same one you can get on a dollar gas station DVD?
Yeah, but you know the transfer is probably better.
Oh yeah, it'd be better, but
yeah. But yeah, I don't know. But you know, there's a lot of stuff just not that interested in coming up.
I do want to get that. God, I really want to get that Monkeys box set. You know, the TV show The Monkeys coming out on Blu-ray, remastered, fully uncut with all the music cues back in and all that. And also Head is in there as well, the Criterion version of it. But
oh, really? Who's putting it out?
I don't remember who's putting it out. If you go to themonkeys.com, they've got it like advertised on their front page there. But it's like $199.
Hey.
Yeah. I mean, I dig the Monkees TV show, but it's kind of stupid as well at times. And I dig the kitsch factor of it, and you know, I like the songs as well. But I can't, justify that.
I loved it when I was a kid, but I've watched some of the recent, the shows in syndication recently.
Well,
doesn't work for me.
No. I watched an episode of The Monster Squad, the actual television show from 76, I believe it was. And I've had the DVD for a number of years. Got it when it got announced. And just popped in and I go, wow, this is bad. Like, the nostalgia I had for it was pretty much wiped. Because I'm thinking, oh man, Monster Squad, yeah, like Wolfman and Dracula and Frankenstein and Fred Grandy, whatever that guy's name was, great. I forgot his name. The guy from Love Boat.
That set looks fucking awesome, though. I will say, if you're a fan of that show, that's something to get.
Monster Squad?
Know? No, The Monkees. I'm just looking at the...
Oh,
sorry.
The Monkees, yeah.
Sorry, totally out of care. Sorry.
No, that's
totally.
Okay. Yeah, are you looking at it? It looks nice looking set, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's really nice. I mean, I don't have any nostalgia for it. I have Head, and that's all I need, I think. But that's a,
Maybe everybody wants Head, yeah.
Yeah, they'll never get that joke.
Yeah.
They won't drive that into the ground, but
give me
well, it's funny because I'm going to introduce my son to Johnny Quest, the original series, tomorrow.
Nice.
And I haven't watched it myself in years, but I'm hoping it holds up and he can get into it because I don't know if he'll tune in to anything really.
It'll make him not trust men with beards, I think. Turbans.
You shouldn't be doing that anyway.
Most of the villains in Johnny Quest are like these Asian Fu Manchu.
Yeah, they're like, we will get you, Dr. Quiz.
It's Dr. Sin, Dr. Khan. It's all these. It's yellow barrel cliches.
It's all the Mongol conquerors.
And their race teaches Johnny Quest judo, so they'll use that at the end of the episode. And killer Komodo dragons and all this great James Bond 1960s stuff. All to a jazz score. So we'll see how that holds up.
There is one film coming out from 1981, Charlie Chan and.
Oh, it's
I can't remember what it's called. Something.
It's Curse of the Dragon Queen. That's it's the movie it. That bankrupted yeah. It bankrupted American cinema. They had decided they were built on Chuck Norris movies. Like the early Chuck Norris films were made for American cinema and built the studio. And so then they fired Chuck Norris, said, we don't want to do Chuck Norris movies anymore. So they did like Charlie Chan and the Curse of the Dragon Queen and were producing the Eye of the Jury with Armand Asante. And then they went bankrupt. They just lost a fortune.
Does that have Peter Ustinov in it, the Charlie Chan flick? Or am I
seeing
it? It does have Peter Ustinov. Okay.
It was like it came off in the ads like a ripoff of Peter Sellers' earlier fiendish plot of Dr. Fu Manchu, which was pretty bad.
Yeah. Right.
The only good Fu Manchu movies are the Jess Franco ones. Am I right, guys?
I don't watch them. I just don't watch them at all.
The only good one is that Boris Karloff movie and then the Republic serial, Drums of Fu Manchu.
The only reason Johnny Ramone has more movies than me is because he collects Jess Franco movies.
They're terrible. Terrible films. But Fu Manchu is by the time they could probably make a really good Fu Manchu movie, it was considered too politically incorrect to make one.
You couldn't do it today. Try doing a Charlie Chan film, like forget it.
They had a script by David Mamet for a young Charlie Chan film to star Russell Long in the late 90s, and I read the script and it was decent, but
they said fuck too much, right?
No, it was here's the problem. It was optioned by the Weinsteins, and the Weinsteins weren't making anything. All they were doing was shelving movies and constantly re-releasing Scream.
They were like, we've made The Burning and
Scream. That's it. Yeah. They would keep re-releasing Scream and Tarantino movies. There were a ton of movies.
We made Playing for Keeps. I feel like I've read like several movies. I mean, several books by screenwriters that talk about a movie that was never made called Playing for Keeps. Like this is like a title that wildly uncreative people come up with.
Shot for a week with Willem Dafoe, and it wasn't funny.
Yeah, they went through that period, the Weinsteins, towards the late 90s, where it was like really lean period. There was nothing they were bringing out that was any good. Even the beautiful Heather Graham couldn't save some of the films she made with him. I'm like, oh, these are horrible. I love looking at Heather Graham, but no, not that one.
Oh, they had like a movie with Jon Stewart and Sean Connery that they wouldn't even release in theaters.
Why would you make a film and shelve it? I mean, if you do it once, twice, but they've been notorious for shelving films for...
I think it's because
the marketing costs more than the movie, right?
Yeah, probably.
And they see it and they go, well, this is a piece of shit. Let's just cut our losses, you know.
Yeah, they weren't hiding a lot of gems. They would acquire a lot of Hong Kong movies they wouldn't release, and then they just kind of quietly dumped them on video.
Have you guys noticed that? I didn't realize this until Andy Sims pointed out to me that Celestial has its own YouTube channel where you can buy Shaw Brothers movies.
You can buy or rent, and it's probably a fine way to watch them if you just want to pay $2 or $3 and watch them once.
Yeah, I was like, there's some here that never came to DVD that I want to see. You know,
I'm told that the iTunes versions that they sell are great. They're actually the best versions of the movies anywhere.
Oh, really?
Because they actually have the original mono mix for the soundtracks, not the really crappy remastered stereo things they did for. DVDs and
I've always been a sort of supporter of iTunes movies as well, because people say, oh, the crappy quality. I don't think so. I've bought a number of them over the last few years since I've started really getting into iTunes films. And like I said, I may have mentioned before in the past the Chicken and Duck Talk that's on there. I bought it and it looks fantastic. It's in HD. It's it's clean. It's it saves me the $50-something plus that the Blu-ray would cost me, and it comes with subtitles. It's perfectly fine, and
our music man Paul Nice has like bought the bulk of those Shaw Brothers iTunes releases and said they're spectacular, the best versions.
I recently purchased an Apple TV, so
nice.
Yeah, so that's good news for me.
Is that the one with the hard drive built in, or did you buy the three?
I bought the one with the hard drive. So.
Oh wow, the four, nice. I've been looking at those, but whatever they call it, what do they call it now?
I got the I got whatever one. It's like 32 gigs.
Yeah, yeah, that's the new version. I don't know if they call it Apple TV 4, if they got a new name for it.
I think it's just Apple TV. I mean,
I mean, not on the actual model where you see 3, but they, you know, generation-wise, it's the fourth generation one. But I've been looking at those. But, I mean, I'm perfectly happy with the streaming at the moment. When those models come down, or those units come down to, say, $99 here, I'll upgrade then for sure. But, yeah, I freaking love Apple TV. I've got mine hooked up to my projector and screen, and they show up just nice, you know. And as well, because I got Vudu, and I've been, like, stupidly, I've been throwing out all the old digital HD codes, but then, like, the last year or so, I thought, nah, I'll just hang on to them, and started going through all my Blu-rays, like, oh, okay, I better put this code in. Now I've got digital downloads of them. So there's some I wish I hadn't thrown out, but whatever. Can't turn back time, I guess. But but they actually link up. What I didn't know was they actually link up to my Vudu account, which is accessible via the theater screen as well. I'm like, oh shit! All these films I could have had as, you know, backups in case my Blu-ray of them of that title actually ever falters. But you know, now I just put the codes in straight away because I bought that Black Mass and I haven't seen it yet. But I chucked the code of that straight in and ended up getting the UHD version of it on Vudu. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So, yeah. But anyway, let's swing it back to Magnum Force, because then we're starting to go off on a tangent, and people are going, you Mangrum promise you wouldn't Force. Do this? Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah. Or if you live up in North Queensland, it'd be Mango Force, I guess.
Mango
the tropical,
Force.
Yeah, the tropic area. Yeah, but I think somebody mentioned in our Facebook group that this is the last of the great sequels, or the last of the good
the
sequels.
The Great Dirty Harry movies.
Great Dirty Harry sequels, yeah. And I would agree with that. I mean, I like The Enforcer. It's okay. Tyne Daly sort of ruins it for me. She's just like, not really. She's a bad mix for. I would have preferred actually Sandra Locke instead of Tyne Daly, but whatever.
She's pretty horrible in it.
Yeah, she is. I mean, I think Sudden Impact's a good one as well. I would probably say that's the last. Deadpool was like, oh.
Yeah, I enjoy Deadpool even though it's a piece of shit.
I do not want to sit through Jim Carrey with a remote control car bomb. It's like, I don't care. That shouldn't. I'll tell you what. That Deadpool should never have been a Harry Callahan film or a Dirty Harry film. What should have been was Tightrope. That is an excellent film. That a lot of people actually get that mixed up as a Dirty Harry film when it's not. That was done in 84, I believe it was. Yeah, 84, and that should have been
83. It might have been 83 because I think it was on cable by 84.
Right. So it would have been 83, 84, one of those years. But that should have been a Dirty Harry film for sure because that is excellent. Tightrope. I find it to be one of his best ones, you know, non Harry Callahan films, and of the '80s films he made, I think that's probably the best one he did.
Mm-hmm.
I like
Deadpool was written.
Yeah,
Pink Cadillac. Yeah. Oh gosh, the Deadpool was actually written by his nutritionist, the husband and wife nutritionist who wrote a book on vitamin intake. They wrote the Deadpool.
Oh Jesus. Yeah, but no, Pink Cadillac I enjoy. I was gonna say, but it's not good. Yeah.
No, it's not a very good film at all.
No. One of his other films I really enjoyed as well was one he was not actually in, was one called Bird. You seen that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the one about Charlie Parker.
Charlie Parker, yeah. Yeah, great film.
I haven't seen it, but I've always wanted to.
It's long. It's like about 100 and, like 2 hours and 50 minutes or something. It's some crazy length, but very good performance by... Glass Eye, what's his name? Forrest Whitaker.
Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah. I was thinking Sammy Davis Jr. for a second, but it's not him. No. Forrest Whitaker. Yeah. Good film. But let's
Sammy.
Yeah.
Sammy, what are you doing?
I haven't got the prop. I can't do it today.
Oh, okay.
If I had thought about it earlier, I would have got the prop, but I ain't got it on me at the moment.
Have to send it to Cole. Terrify him.
No, what I'm actually gonna do is stick it on the soundboard when I get that up and running.
Hello. Yes.
Oh Lord! Yeah, don't even invoke that episode. My goodness,
it's the greatest.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, but I will say this, you know, without being misogynistic, that Asian bird was hot. Like, really, I don't really go much on Asian women. I mean, I'm not okay. Please don't throw your arms up, going, "Man, racist." Not the case. Nothing to do with that. It's just they don't.
In fact, people might say you're racist for saying that. They'll be like, "You're fetishizing the Asian women."
Yeah.
Oh, yes. They're just, you know, a bunch of...
You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't, Stu.
Yeah, really.
That's very true.
Yeah, very much so. But, yeah, wow. Nice looking. Really nice looking. Just wanted to get that out there, that's all.
All right.
Yeah. All right, fellas, you want to got anything else with this? Or just want to wrap this up?
I think that's it for me.
Hunter and I did an episode on the Milius documentary like about a year ago. And we had talked about we didn't really believe him, or at least I didn't, when he said he was blacklisted in Hollywood because of his political views. And I said it was just because he'd never had a hit. And that he directed, I should emphasize.
Right.
And I mentioned it to James Ellroy when we were at the screening last month. And Ellroy said, he's like, I've never had a problem. And Elroy's really right wing. And he's like, I've never had a problem. As long as you do your work and it's successful, you get work.
Yeah, John and I have talked about how we thought that was bullshit. Like, yeah. And John and I are not liberals. You know?
Right.
All the hell you say.
And I think, and we're not fucking, we don't enjoy the crying oppression the way some conservatives do. They like to go, we're actually the oppressed ones. You know,
yeah, we're victims.
The what's that word that rhymes with fuck that comes to mind? Cuck. Yes, cuck.
Yes. Fucking cucks.
I just had to bring the word cuck into it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
I just told him I was right wing, just to keep it simple. And then his face just lit up. He was like, me too, buddy. We're the only ones in here.
Listen, you're as right wing as me.
Yeah, he did. He goes, I asked him about the Bruce Wagner video. And,
what did he say?
He was just laughing that he didn't know it was on YouTube. He was just cracking up. He goes, oh yeah, Bruce is right wing. I'm not making that up.
It's almost feels like it's a Masonic order, you know. You know, you got this like a secret handshake to show that you're right wing.
Oh, I know it is. It's like where it's a secret group meeting or something.
Yeah, we you know what, someone is like of a like mind if they use the word cuck.
You know? or if they go,
goddamn cucks, you're like, your ears perk up and you go, what'd you say?
Well, you
welcome, brother.
Your left ear pierced.
but then Elroy at one point was like, no, I'm pro Israel. And you are too, John. You're pro Israel, just like I am. And just like, so they start speaking for me in the conversation. He goes,
of course.
John, we're pro Israel. Nobody else in this room is.
Of course.
It's actually, I'm sorry to say this.
Listen, I love the Jews.
I'm sorry to say this, John, but you actually telling James Ellroy I'm right wings is rather sad. It's almost like a confession. It's like coming out of a political closet, you know? It's like,
well, here's the thing. Well, this is the situation. Everybody at that screening is a liberal. And Ellroy will come up.
Fucking Devin Faraci runs their magazine.
I know. It's like, and Ellroy will come in there, and the first thing he'll start doing is telling Obama jokes. Like, he was doing an introduction, and the audience was kind of dead because it was the second feature of a double feature. Everybody's kind of exhausted. He goes, what's up with you guys? Sitting around and waiting for your welfare checks from Obama?
Oh,
it's like...
Oh,
I mean,
man.
So he's intentionally baiting them. Like, the first thing he'll start doing is saying Obama jokes and stuff to the group, you know, as we're gathering before the screening. And he just knows he's just trolling those guys. So I just told him, well, I'm just kind of right wing. I just mentioned it nonchalantly. And then he lit up. He goes, you are, buddy. Me too. We're the only ones. Not even my wife is not a right winger.
He sounds like he needs to go on a spoken word tour with Garrow.
Oh, dude, he's awesome. Like, he would be great at that.
I'm loving the John Grace, James Ellroy bromance. That's
I know. Talk about burgeoning, right?
Yeah. Maybe I can pitch for us to get a radio show or something. Invite liberal callers and yell at them and, you know, say, go hug a tree, hippie, and all that stuff.
So you know, but, like Rush Limbaugh.
Like you always go, goodbye, cuck.
Yeah. I would totally do that, too. I'd be a total – I'd host the first pseudo-altcon radio show.
It's pretty cool. Heads, right?
Yeah, it's pretty cool stuff though. But that once a month screening there is a real highlight. Like last month he showed our Nashville, the Robert Altman movie, which was which surprised a lot of people that he even showed that. But then I recognized at the end, I go, well, I know why you like it. It's because of the parallel storylines.
Is he going to show...
Because that's how his novels are. So.
Is he going to show Robert Altman's shortcuts on the big screen?
No, he said the only other Altman movies he likes are McCabe and Mrs. Miller, and which he wants to show.
Which is also getting a Criterion release.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, and he'll be able to show it then. And he also likes, I remind him, I go, what about The Long Goodbye? He goes, yes, The Long Goodbye. I like that one. You know, and that's all he likes. He doesn't like other Altman
movies. See shortcuts on the big screen. You get to see Julianne Moore's snatch for like 4 minutes straight. When she's just standing
She's just standing there like with her pants off. Like
the top on, pants off, just screaming at Matthew Modine. I'm like,
yeah,
I love Robert Altman. Seriously, it's the best movie ever.
I haven't seen it. I've never seen that film.
Talk about films are exhausting.
I'm not a big Altman fanatic.
I have the Criterion version of it. It's worth seeing.
Okay.
Is there a Blu-ray release of that, Hunter, or just DVD at the moment?
I think there is, actually.
I wouldn't mind getting it. It's actually, apart from Julianne Moore's muff, it's actually a half-decent movie.
Yeah, it is.
You get to see some naked Laurie Singer as well, if I'm not mistaken. Is she in that? I don't know.
It's been a while. I'm pulling it up right now. Looks like it's just on DVD, and it comes with the Raymond Carver book that has all the stories that the movie takes from.
Oh, yeah, really? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But McCabe and Mrs. Miller is getting a release from them soon, and that's, I like that movie a lot. That's a good.
Yeah, I've never seen it. Elroy was describing it.
Oh, you need to see it, John.
He also said that was the only Warren Beatty movie he liked.
I like it. I think it's my favorite thing he's ever done.
Huh.
But yeah, it's a good. It's one of those snowbound westerns.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So it's like Day of the Outlaw.
Yeah, it is. I just got the Masters of Cinema release of.
Oh man, that's a good film.
Turn your back on Arrow there, mate.
I've still got Mr. Arrow releases.
What's up, Mr. Arrow Shelf?
Mr. Arrow Shelf being very quiet on the Arrow front.
I just got a Hard to Kill with Oliver Reed from them, so.
Oh, let me say Steven Seagal there for a second.
No, it's got a, fuck, what's his name? It's got the guy who plays the villain in
Lance
Cobra.
Henriksen.
No, the guy who plays the villain in Cobra was Sylvester Stallone.
Lance Henriksen, he's a villain in every bloody movie.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. No, it has George Kennedy and Oliver Reed. It's by the Greek guy who did the Zero Boys and Island.
Oh, Nico Mastarakis.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
What the hell did I remember that day?
I don't know.
Yeah, really, right? Sounds like something I ate at the restaurant the other month.
Yeah, they've been putting out a lot of his stuff, and I've been enjoying Nico Mastarakis movies.
Oh, he must have struck a deal with him. He used to make like a movie every year, and it would always be on cable. And there was like something called some weird like alien movie, but with Meg Foster and else.
Crazy Eyes Meg Foster.
Yeah, it was a really weird film. And but no, he would always have a flick. It would play. He may have made two movies a year, but they would just. I don't know if he just was just sitting on a lot of money and could make movies left and right.
He's probably the reason Greece is going into a
into a financial shithole.
maybe he should have made some karate flicks with Taki. Taki Theatocropolis.
He's the senior judo champ.
The senior, the Shotokan karate master from Greece.
God.
As somebody who's half Greek, I'm ashamed now.
I'm sorry, it's not Hard to Kill, it's Hired to Kill.
Hired to Kill? Okay, I think that was like a low
budget.
It's got
Brian Thompson, Oliver Reed, George Kennedy.
Lorenzo Lamas. God. Oh, jeez. All right, let's go around and rate Magnum Force, I think.
All right.
John.
I give it about a, probably about 6.5.
Okay. What about you, H-Man?
I give it a 6. Solid 6.
Whoa, you haters. I'm giving it an 8.
I don't hate it. I just think it's a good solid movie. It's not my favorite Clint, not my least favorite Clint, but you know,
I hate to see what Deadpool's going to get if we ever get to
it. That's like
1. Yeah, I can tell you now, 1.
I don't know. Maybe I should give it a 7. It is a good flick.
It is. It seems a little low.
I give it a 6.5. My only beef is the pacing.
I was going to say this film feels about 20 minutes too long. That's
yeah.
It is.
It's 2 hours too long. It needs to be like 90 minutes, you know.
Yeah.
Or or 40, you know.
Yeah.
Tops.
And we should have got more of the because, Asian girl as well.
Well, Dirty Harry is such a tight film, and then you see this, and it's like it doesn't have an editor.
Well, I remember I saw Dirty Harry, and when I saw this, when I was a kid on TV, the first time I sat down and watched it on DVD, I remember I had a hard time sitting through it after Dirty Harry because it felt it didn't feel as smooth as that movie.
You can't watch it on a double feature.
It's jarring.
I was going to say, I was going to ask why Donald Siegel didn't direct this one, but then I guess I was just thinking he probably was doing Charlie Varrick at the time.
Also, he didn't like the Terrence Malick script very much. Okay. That's why he didn't use it. And since that was sort of the uncredited basis for Milius' script, they figure that Siegel just wouldn't be into the idea. And I think he didn't want to be stuck being the Dirty Harry director for Clint.
Right.
Like and Clint was willing to give, like, Ted Post is a friend of his from the Rawhide days and Hang 'Em High, and I think he just wanted to give him a shot to make a big feature and get on the studio payroll, basically, like the rest of them.
Give him the chance to make Good Guys Wear Black.
For American cinema.
Yeah.
There you go.
Tell the Spartans.
There's an idea. Hunter, if you're... cozy up with a woman, just pop on the Octagon with Chuck Norris.
Of course. No, that's just as effective as a Chris Isaac record, right?
Yeah, really. If you really want to be effective with a Chuck Norris film, watch A Force of One.
Of course. Ernest Tidyman.
That's an awesome film, mate. Force of One. I love it. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, I'm going to give Magnum Force an 8. I still enjoyed it quite a bit.
All right.
Bit long, but yeah. But that's basically it. I think I'm pretty much spent.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I think it's time to. I don't know.
Go listen
to some Chris Isaak or something like that. I don't know.
Fuck yeah, Pretty Girls Don't Cry.
Yeah, I'll blast some Chris Isaak from the theater room and just see if they start getting drawn to the house. You know, like
like a siren call.
Yeah,
yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
All right, guys, check us out, midnightmoviecowboys.com. Look us up on Stitcher. Subscribe, leave a rating, review on iTunes. That really helps us out.
Don't look for us on YouTube.
Look for us on YouTube. We're not there anymore.
Not there anymore.
All right.
Black marketing is our name, man.
Hey, we're renegades. All right. And with that, guess adios.
Mahalo.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.